Go ahead.
Okay, fine. Go.
Okay, my name is Dan Reichman, work at Oregon State Hospital in the forensic unit. My left is Chuck Forward, who works at Oregon State Hospital in the Maple Unit.
In the Child and Adolescent.
Child and Adolescent Unit, excuse me, just moved. And on the end is Bruce Adams, who has a major portion of the presentation of facts, sort of, or opinions. Also works a forensic unit of OSH. Our key issues here, the same as many other people, is an injury rate that is extremely high. Pardon? I'm not sure. Bruce will have some numbers. We will have to get some of the same information that I'm sure McLaren will. The other factors that affect OSH to a large degree is that many of our departments deal directly with convicted felons or mentally ill offenders who, other than their mental illness, would have been convicted.
So you're dealing with these people that were convicted and doomed to...
Guilty, but not responsible.
Maybe doomed is the right word. I think it is the right word. Deemed to be insane.
Yes, guilty but not responsible.
And sent to you.
And sent to us. We also have convicted felons who were not found to be insane who come to us for treatment.
Please, I hate to put the words on record. I really better not. What can I call bleeding hearts other than bleeding hearts, right?
We call them earth muffins.
Okay, well, maybe that's good. What do you deal with in the way that you can... What are your restrictions out there in the way you can deal with these?
Restrictions are much greater than they are in corrections.
About ACLU and whoever else, governs that.
Corrections has one type of training for dealing with violence. We have greater restrictions. I'm the trainer for preventing and managing aggressive behavior and employee response to violent situations. We have very, very strong restrictions on what kind of physical maneuvers that we can use, what kind of holds that we can use. If any of those are broken, we're put on suspension immediately and investigated. An example is the police and firemen, or the police and corrections are taught hair holds, which are very, very effective in controlling a violent person. We're not allowed to use any hair holds at all. Mental health is much more restrictive than...
Can you bend back a finger?
Absolutely not. No pressure point holds.
If someone were to use such a hold, they would be placed on suspension with or without pay.
So what do you do?
Investigated for patient abuse.
What do you do?
I can show you the hold.
Okay. Get up there.
The holds are simply balance and leverage holds that to maneuver a person from one place to another. It's much more difficult. It generally causes more injury to staff. It's safer for the patient. He gets hurt less than he would in corrections, but it's much more difficult to do. It's very difficult to do, to be very professional when someone has tried to stab you with a knife, and you have to remember that you can't put his arm past a 45-degree angle, that you have to remember that if you put him on the ground, you have to slide him slowly to the ground. It's real hard to do.
There goes my son with one of our other committee members up the door and down the hallway.
Besides the fact, this is just to get back to our population at the hospitals, besides the fact that that we're dealing with forensic patients who have been committed and found guilty by reason of mental defect, we're dealing with a population from the community of which over 50% comes in on an involuntary hold. And of the 50% of the voluntaries that come in, a good number of them are committed to involuntary holds, court commitments, court orders. We get patients transferred in from jails, from prisons. And basically, the days of the happy crazy are over. I mean, the mentally ill people we get now they're more seriously mentally ill, they are more violent, and they tend to be more unpredictable.
We average about one murder a year. patient murdering another patient. It's real hard on the job when you come to work and find a man lying in the hall who, this last one had been there for about an hour when I got to work. The police were there, everybody was, all the patients were in their rooms, and the man was in the hall for almost 5 hours while we stepped around and over him, serving patients in their rooms while the police completed their investigation. He was killed because the other patient wanted to hear what his boots sounded like stomping on a man's chest. When I was asked to do this, I didn't know, I've never done anything like this. I didn't know exactly what it was that you wanted. I thought maybe you wanted to know what it felt like to be a psych security aide or to work in a mental institution. I've been there for 13 years. I've worked forensics all of that time, 11 of them on maximum security. During that time, I've been stabbed twice, serious damage to the vertebrae in my neck, dislocated collarbone, a couple cracked ribs, broken wrist, four or five concussions. It's hard to remember after a while. Anyway, a lot of injuries. I'm a little more exceptional than most because most people don't stay there 13 years. Of the 167 psychiatric security aides in forensics, in 17 years under the present system, I can retire in 17 years. The 167 psych security aides, there are six who can retire before me.
How many employees do you have out there that would be affected by this change?
The number I have is 700 psych security aides.
No,
that's the population. 475 psych security aides, the other staff, and psych aides. The other staff, probably another 250, so about 800.
If necessary, we can work up the statistics the same as McLaren and Hillcrest can. Damish is still a high ranker on the Dirty Dozen. OSH has just recently gotten off of it. We can, I believe, show that our injury rates are higher, our injury and incident rates are higher than at the prisons.
Well, we have
state
to
police level.
We have to consider you in at risk in the same manner that police agencies are at risk in order to be able to include you. And I know, you know, that there is a percentage of the people you deal with are criminals and a percentage of the people you deal with aren't. So, you know, maybe that's a special situation and a special category that maybe at some point should be addressed if rather than just police and fire, but those employees that are at risk in their employment or the same type of things that can happen to you if you're a police officer or whatever. So, Representative Dominey.
How many of your patients are criminals, convicted criminals?
330 in forensics.
Another.
Roger might know it.
CGP, Roger?
We'll ask Roger when he comes up.
330 in forensics.
That's not counting the ones that are on the community wards.
So that's how many, what type of a percentage is this of the total people?
Of the total population, almost 50%.
Almost 50%, yes.
Well, I don't have accurate numbers on the,
well,
on the ones.
Well, you'll get them. Wards. That's fine. Anything else?
I did bring some things to show you if you'd be interested in seeing them, some weapons I've collected.
Yeah, I guess so. If you can stick them out here without you being apprehended by one of the
one of the guards. One of the reasons for this, while he's getting that ready, I'll explain. We weren't exactly sure what was needed to prove the case, whether it was emotions, facts, numbers, statistics. We're not great with statistics. We are great with security work and with dealing with violent people and with a very unpredictable crowd. Part of this is to emphasize the criminal thinking nature even of a mentally ill person. Someone can classically be mentally ill and still have a very criminal nature to them. We have one person who's been at the hospital since he is 9 years old who is a master at picking any lock you want to just about put in front of him. That's what he has chosen to specialize.
I'll explain to that stuff in a little bit.
See, this kind of stuff can even be found on the community wards.
That was used on a staff member held at his throat in a hostage situation.
Yeah, well, that'd do some damage.
Yes, sir. This one is especially bad. That's four disposable razor heads on a corn dog stick. A patient on the sex offenders ward was going to use that as a raping tool on a female staff member on graveyard.
What's in the jug? I hate to have you ask.
If you're thirsty and you want to get drunk, there you go. That's bread crusts, fruit juice, and sugar. It takes about 4 days to make alcohol.
I bet it's real tasty.
It looks good, doesn't it?
The simplicity with which they can make weapons is one of the things that's real interesting. One of the things that we found early on are there are handles on most mattresses. If you look at a household mattress, you may find
that's
metal handles.
That's out of a
handles.
Shoe.
That's the support in the shoe.
Out of a shoe. Fast, dangerous weapon. Very, very.
Very.
This one, I don't mean to. Do you know what this is? This one I found 3 weeks ago. Hold it like that. It's feel what it feels like. It's a perfect little stabbing weapon. This one, you know, it doesn't look too good now, but with some boot black on it on night shift, it would make somebody nervous. The patient told us that he was making it for his Halloween outfit, but it was March. Vibram.
That's the toilet paper.
Caffeine, yeah. $1 a piece. This one was used against me.
One of your concussions?
And so was this one. No, they missed with both of them.
This is, I think, an interesting bit of creativity.
Put a patient in a seclusion room that said he was suicidal. And we took his clothing away so that he couldn't hang himself and his bedding away. He said, I'll hang myself with the toilet paper. And that's what he made.
That is toilet paper.
That's a rope.
Toilet paper.
No, as a matter of fact, he called us over and he said, look, see,
he
I told you.
To prove it.
Yeah, he just wanted to prove that he could do it.
This kind of activity.
The image that somebody who is mentally ill is thus mentally not able to function and think
is not
accurate.
Over the past 8 years, I've collected over 2,000 pieces of this stuff over the last 7 or 8 years.
This kind of activity does not just go on the forensics ward. It goes on the children's unit.
This one came from CTP. This one that was held at the staff member's neck was CTP.
And even the community admissions unit, the Maple unit, this activity goes on at Damish State Hospital and Eastern Oregon Psych Center, too.
This one from the children's unit.
It's a hospital-wide problem as it is a hospital-wide danger.
Yep. My background is forensic, but this stuff is basic to the entire hospital. You find this everywhere.
In the past 3 years, on the community admissions unit, there has been a murder and an attempted murder, as well as many suicide attempts.
The admissions unit?
The admissions unit, the community admissions unit, the one where they used to get in the people that were just a little crazy off the streets, or they're not a little crazy anymore, they're very crazy. Over 50% of the admissions to Community Admissions Unit Oregon State Hospital are on POHs, which means they are a danger to themselves or others.
Police officer.
Show that to Representative Dominey, that rope made out of Representative Walden, I mean.
This another large percentage.
Who told us he could kill himself with toilet paper.
Another large percentage are in on warrants of detention, transfers from jails, transfers from McLaren and Hillcrest.
They're making alcohol in there with bread crusts and fruit and whatever.
You know, they don't get away with this very often because when they're about four steps in the process and they have to take the lid off and it smells so bad, the entire ward.
Thing that came out of a shoe.
A shoe.
The last of a shoe.
A pair of shoes just like yours.
It's not a safe place to work.
In forensics, they have to wear tennis shoes. We don't allow them to have regular shoes because...
Show them the razor blade job.
This was going to be used... That centerpiece is a corn dog stick that came from our cafeteria. When I said that he was going to use that to rape the woman with, I didn't mean that he was going to hold it to her throat and rape her. That was the tool with which he was going to rape her. She quit. Not because of this incident, but because another patient did attack her and attempt to rape her.
Half of the people they deal with are criminally insane that have been put there by a judge, a jury, or both.
And 90% have been sent there by the courts. Under either civil or criminal commitment.
Is there a way to decipher the ones who deal with the criminals from the workers I'm talking about? Do you separate those who have been criminally insane from those who are...
Let me explain. There's a makeup to the hospital of what's basically considered five specialty programs. You have a children's unit, which some of these weapons came off of, that handles a lot of the kids that come out of McLaren who are mentally ill and too violent to be handled there. You have the forensic unit, which is one Bruce and I are most familiar with, which is about equal in size, patient number, and everything to Damage State Hospital. You have the correctional treatment program, which is what Roger will talk about, which is inmates directly out of corrections.
Can I? Okay, fine. We don't want to belabor the whole
thing. Okay, no, but he was asking. Yeah. The other two units are what is referred to as MAPLE, which used to be where people would voluntarily sign themselves in.
Well, you better let me ask a question. If
okay.
I don't get to ask it, I'll forget it. What's your oldest employee that handles these patients?
Oldest?
Oldest in age, not length of service.
Mid-50s.
How long has that person been there?
Probably, the only one that I know that's
Spalding is closer to 60.
Yeah, there are a couple that are about 60. One works graveyard and has his entire time. And Dave Spalding, who's almost 60, has been there about 10 years.
I'll give you one clue to the retirement question, though. As Bruce pointed out, in forensics, I have been there 13 years. I'm number 6 on who can retire next.
And I'm number 7. And there have only been, since I've been there, 9 psych security aides that have retired.
Let's see where we get this great big thing here. I'll ask Bob when he comes up. Hell of a fiscal impact. 6.34% of the payroll in the whole bet. I mean, if nobody's going to stay there long enough to retire. Well,
yeah, that's my point. Yeah, I don't, it can't cost anybody too much money because not many people make it.
You're DRS time that you can use to retire on and that, but your length of service is going to be minimal. Okay. Anything more you want to get into?
Chair, I just want to get back. Is there any way, and maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but I see a difference between those that are dealing with convicted people from those who are not. Is there any way of separating out those people who work just with those who are convicted?
Okay. We have one unit in the hospital, the geriatrics program, which deals with elderly, the neurologically impaired, and medically injured individuals that have a lesser number of criminally court committed or such individuals. They may have civilly court committed individuals on them. Unfortunately, that particular unit has the highest injury rate in the hospital out of the 5. So they handle a very violent population that cannot be handled in the general nursing home community. They do handle people. If I have somebody in maximum security who has an appendectomy or an injury of some variety, they get to take care of them while he's recuperating in their setting.
Also, when there is a problem, when there's a fight or some sort of physical altercation, it doesn't really matter where you work because you will be sent to go and assist. So even if you're on a ward where you have very little physical problems, you can be called any time and are frequently called to go to other wards to assist in violent situations.
Anything else? Further discussion? Thank you, sir.
Will there be a work session?
We're going to see about that. Bob Adams, Fred Evans, I mean. Roger. Roger Evans, right. Come on up and tell us who you are and give us your background, Roger.
My name is Roger Evans, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm here representing myself, and as such, maybe I place myself on a kind of a list that you identified for yourself early on in this session, sir.
What list was that? I forgot.
Something to do with a bastard or something like that.
It was a bastard situation, which is also an adjective.
That it fits, perhaps. But I am here for my personal reasons rather than representing fellow group of employees. I'm employed in the correctional treatment programs, which is located at the state hospital. It's a program designed to provide treatment services for inmates from the correctional institutions. They are convicted felons serving a sentence in prison. And perhaps I could respond to some specific questions that came up when these gentlemen were presenting their testimony, I don't recall any of those specific questions right now. So, my concern is over some of the wording in House Bill 2842, and I would like to reference page 3, line 3, and line 456, defining the term police officer.
That's current law.
That's current law, yes, sir. It defines people or employees covered as employees of Department of Corrections institutions whose duties as assigned by the superintendent include the custody of persons committed to the custody of or transferred to the institution. Now, that could be defined to include folks in the correctional treatment programs, which is a program funded by the Corrections Division but administered by mental health. That's been interpreted by administration at the state hospital and apparently by PERS to not include CTP staff. Okay, then as I read line 30 through 33, item N, employees of the mental health division who work at state hospitals for mentally ill persons as defined in ORS 426.010, except those assigned duties do not at any time include responsibility for performing or directing the custody, control, or treatment or supervision of mentally ill persons. Well, by law, people found guilty of felonies are not mentally ill. If they're mentally ill, they're found not responsible and not sent to prison. So my specific concern is, given this wording, if this bill is passed, employees of the correctional treatment programs still may not be covered by the police and firemen's retirement. Now, what I would prefer to see is some specific reference to employees of the correctional treatment programs to be covered by the same coverage that is being considered to be extended to other employees. Now,
I'm not quite with you.
Okay.
You're dealing with something other than mental health?
Yes. We are a corrections program located at the state hospital. And under current interpretation, employees of the correctional treatment programs are not covered by the Police and Firemen's Retirement Act. We're the only group of employees in the adult criminal justice system who are not.
So you're here to be included in the bill, but you don't qualify under the definition in...
Under the definition, we're exempted, sir, because our clients are not mentally ill. Unless their mental illness has occurred after their commitment to the prison or if it was overlooked by the court. Pardon me?
How many of you are there?
Rough figures, 80. We serve approximately 120 inmates from the prisons.
You're employed by the Department of Corrections.
Yeah, who is your employer other than the state of Oregon?
Well, that again, sir, is why I referred to the list as a bastard. We're funded by the Corrections Department, administered by the Mental Health Division. We're located at the state hospital. We go to the prisons and select our clients from the prisons and have them transferred to the hospital. And all of our attempts to get this addressed through the 10 years that this program has been in existence has defined it so as to exclude this group of employees from said coverage. And I'm concerned that if this bill passes, the new wording may also be subject to such interpretation.
You're speaking on behalf of the mental health division people?
I'm speaking on behalf of myself, sir.
But I mean, you seem to say that the bill, instead of including the mental health people who work at state hospitals is excluding them. Is that what you're saying?
No, sir.
No. What are you saying?
I'm saying that it's excluding correctional treatment programs staff who work at the hospital.
Why?
But who are working with people who are not mentally ill.
Well, that's why...
Because they are sent from prisons to our program for treatment of mental or emotional problems that develop while they're in prison or perhaps were missed during the trial session.
But aren't they
or sex offenders? No, sir. Not by legal definition. They're not. They're coming for treatment at a program located at the state hospital. The correctional treatment programs itself is defined as an adult residential care facility and is treating sex offenders, drug and alcohol offenders, a group of mentally slower inmates who are too bright to be considered for Fairview and that sort of an institution. It's my personal belief that were this program located someplace other than the state hospital, that probably those staff would have been covered originally under this definition of police officer.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you do, rather than all the technical stuff.
Okay, in 79, this legislative body defined the need to provide counseling service to various populations within the corrections division. Those included what they referred to as a social skills group, a mental emotionally disturbed group, a sex offenders group, and that's the program that I work with, and drug and alcohol group. People within the prisons, inmates within the prisons, currently apply through their counselors for the program. We go there, select them, bring them outside the prison to our program for treatment. If they complete treatment successfully, then they're released on parole and
What kind of violence do you run into, and that what kind of risk are you at? You're at risk, and you know. In other words, I'm trying to tell you that all this other stuff is fine, but we have to know what the situation is. I mean, you know.
Yes, sir.
That's what I want to know.
If I may, sir, it's exactly the same as those officers in the prisons. It's the same clientele. They come to us, return to prisons, or go out on parole, supervised by patrol officers who are also covered under the act. We are an extension service of the corrections division treating the same clients.
Are you considered a corrections officer then?
No, not by legal definition, we are not. But I think my interpretation of this wording.
What wording?
The wording on page 3, line 3, police officer, line 4, 5, and 6, include the custody of persons committed to the custody of or transferred to the institution by the superintendent.
Well, you're already in the included.
That's a logical assumption, sir. That's an assumption that I make. Oregon State Hospital, my employer, and the PERS disagree with that.
So get Attorney General's opinion on it if you're already in statute. What good does it do to include you in a statute that you assume you're already included in if...
That's very logical, sir. I don't quite know where to go.
Max.
Well, as I understand it, he's not a Department of Corrections employee. And if he's not a Department of Corrections employee, he's not going to fit under A as a police officer.
Yes, sir. That's the interpretation of...
And if he isn't an employee of Department of Corrections and he is an employee of the Mental Health Division, then his concern is with the new language to make sure that it covers him. And I assume that he's concerned about the controlled treatment or supervision of mentally ill persons placed in such hospitals.
Yes, sir.
Because he doesn't supervise mentally ill persons.
Every one of the people that you supervise are convicted felons.
Felons, yes, sir. Serving a sentence in one of the prisons in the Corrections Division.
Go ahead.
Do they bring those people to you on a daily basis?
Daily? No, sir.
They live at the hospital?
Yes. Oh, yes, sir. They're inpatient in the program at the hospital.
Do you have any, and do you have anything to do with the custody control or supervision of them?
Yes. I personally manage a sex offenders treatment program. Part of my responsibility is going to prison, doing the screening interviews, deciding when people come to the program, if necessary, when they return to prison, et cetera.
Essentially, you do treatment. Do you have any guards with you or anybody else? Do any of these other people that we've been talking about go with you or do anything with you?
There are no guards located at the state hospital in any of the...
By